Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Whether you're a fan of bourbon, scotch, tequila, rum, gin, whatever it is, VSLiquor.com has you covered. And here's the best part. Don't leave your home. VSLiquor.com is the most reliable alcohol delivery there is. Make sure to type in the code SPORTS when you check out, and you'll get 15% off your initial order. VSLiquor.com, proud partner of the Sliwa Show. Hey, Ben, I just saw a tweet from Donovan Mitchell, okay? So Bleacher Report puts out a tweet 7 minutes ago. Donovan Mitchell, Carmelo, and Dwight Howard were among players who spoke about possibly sitting out per Shams. Donovan Mitchell, stop it. That's it. All he put out. Stop it.
Oh, the NBA's back, even if it's not back, Alan.
It is back. By the way, Ben, how funny is this? How about your timing, right? Like Friday night, 7 o'clock. Hey, let's do a show. You know, we'll come on, you know, hour. We'll just shoot the, you know what? I mean, just the perfect time to talk all this basketball stuff. So you were setting up Shut Up and Dribble. I want you to tell me a little bit, you know, for those who didn't get a chance, this was – just give all the details. Three-part series, Showtime. You gave a little bit of background of how that title obviously came about. But talk about it because it is definitely relevant in this time.
Yeah, like all great documentaries, it kind of started going down the path one way and because of a number of series of events became something else. I remember there was early talks of that being about the 84, 96, and 03 drafts, right? Jordan, AI, LeBron, or those kind of the guys, right? But then it turned into this idea of athletes and activism and NBA players using their voices in basketball. And then the Laura Ingram thing happened during production. So it really ramped up that way and became this kind of beautiful piece that Gautam Chopra, who did Kobe Bryant's documentary Muse and the Tom versus Time series for Facebook, put together with Maverick and LeBron and you know their whole team to really tell the story of guys in basketball in particular using their voice from Oscar Robertson and to you know to how free agency came about and from Craig Hodges being blackballed and Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf and you know the NBA. You know, look, Alan, George Floyd was murdered 2 weeks ago. The NBA is the only league we're talking about where players are saying we might not come back because of so what's going on in our country socially right now and the issues of systemic racism. Like you're not hearing that around baseball. You're not hearing that around the NFL. You're seeing a powerful
NFL's been louder. NFL's definitely been.
Yeah. Which would be a powerful statement from the NFL, but not to the way where Kyrie, like, you know, but to hear it tonight from Kyrie and to see Taylor Rooks, who's as dialed in as anybody, to say, hey, this is the number one thing on the call. It's a big moment. And Rod, well, and also, to your point about Shut Up and Dribble, you know, at 2018, that was the moment, right? When LeBron spoke out and KD spoke out in that video with Kerry. And here we are 2 years later. And, you know, we're continuing the conversation and continuing the fight. It's amazing.
You know, Ben, I promoted this. I'm going to promote it one more time. Jonathan Martin, New York Times, spoke to LeBron James on his More Than a Vote organization. And the idea and the concept, you haven't got a chance, great article in New York Times. He's coming up at 8:30. The idea is the goal is to try and drive younger black voters, particularly men. And, you know, LeBron's very strategic with some of the different individuals that he has a part of this organization. And Jalen Rose, one of them. Drawn to Blake, Trae Young, another one that's involved. By the way, some WNBA players as well. You've been one because I remember a couple years back, actually a few different times, you have sent me these invites to come for these Rock the Vote events.
Yeah. I remember you guys, the whole team came out All-Star Weekend here in LA. That's right.
Yep. So we had come, I think the last time I did it, myself and Amanda came. This was maybe, I don't know, the last
Kate
one that
came, Amin
right.
came. Yeah, a bunch Kate's of people came. House. I remember that.
Yeah, the whole crew. So one of the things that I think one of the goals of raising awareness is also for those who think that, hey, my vote doesn't matter. It's just one vote, right? Like that, you hear that a lot. Or you just have those also who have never voted before or they think, well, my friends aren't voting, so I'm not going to vote. You have been one of the most active in trying to get people to vote. And, you know, obviously you're a part of Rock the Vote. What's happened for you in these last couple of weeks with just that movement and how that ties into NBA players?
Well, it's to your point, Alan, is that seems to be the next step for taking action, right? Is getting people registered to vote, getting people to vote. In doing so, you then become more plugged in into what's going on a local level, on with the props that are on different, you know, ballots in your state, right? So using voting as a tool to engage people in the political process is key. This whole relationship with me and my passion for voting came from being a long-suffering Knicks fan. And when they're 20 games under 500 in January and they tell you to vote for Tim Hardaway Jr. for All-Star, I'm like, no, how about vote for the president? How about vote for Congress? I'm not voting for Kevin Knox. It's ridiculous. So that's really where it came from. I swear to God, I was like, wow, they're really telling me to vote for Kevin Knox. I'm getting Google alerts. I'm getting push notifications. Like, imagine if they amplified voting, right? We partnered with the Golden State Warriors in 2018. Memphis Grizzlies rookie Jaren Jackson, when he got drafted, he came on the NBA stage, number 4 pick, opened up his coat, and we had Rock the Vote logos on the inside of his jacket draft night.
That's right.
His mother is Terry Jackson, who's the head of the Players Association for the WNBA. So we partner with them. And all of a sudden, to answer your question, the last 2 weeks, we've been getting calls from different teams, from the league, from different media partners that are in business with the league saying, all right, let's go. Let's amplify this movement to get people registered to vote. So I think it's important that people get information. You can go to rockthevote.org, learn more, register to vote, re-register, check it again. Register 5 of your friends, but it starts with that. And I think the NBA has a real opportunity. You'll see this election. You'll see with LeBron's work with More Than a Voter, with Rock the Vote, with Chris Paul's work, with Why We Vote, with Michelle Obama. You're going to see NBA players really, really out there educating and supporting young people in particular to register to vote.
All right, that's a great message right there. And as the show progresses, Jesse is on it, Curtis is on it. If something breaks, another tweet comes out.
Kevin Knox for All-Star. Give me unbelievable. Vote. Really? By the way, they lost to the Hawks by 30. You want me to vote for him? All right.
That's so good, man. It's so good. By the way, what do you think? I saw this earlier today. What was that conversation about Damian Lillard and the Knicks?
Oh,
was that
gosh.
Just,
yeah,
real quick. I didn't get a chance. I honestly, no joke. You know.
Yeah, I know. No, any other time, I would have been upset that there was rumors that a couple years ago, Damian Lillard thought he was going to be traded to the Knicks and they would have formed this Adidas basketball super team
right
with Porzingis or something, right?
But
Knicks fans don't even care about that because we have an owner who's completely tone deaf and doesn't know how to speak out and use his voice and be a leader. So we have to deal with that first before
at
Damian
least
Lillard
that.
Rumors. Yeah, exactly. Oh, God.
At least Damian that's expected. Lillard. Okay, let's switch gears for a quick second. I think there's three guarantees in life, okay? Death, taxes, and baseball still not agreeing to a deal. Okay, those are the three things right now, Ben. those are the three things I think stand out. Here's the latest from a baseball front. And, you know, Ben, I know you're a huge baseball fan. Here's the latest from the owners, reported by Jeff Passan. 72 games and for players to max out at 80% of their full prorated salaries, okay? So technically, the overall compensation would go up from $1.432 billion to $1.5 billion, but that's, you know, the most. Previous deal from the players was 89 games and full prorated salaries. So what does this all mean? Trevor Bauer of the Cincinnati Reds tweeted, just so you all know, 78% of prorated salaries or 70% of prorated salaries at 72 games is the exact same as, wait for it, full prorated at 48. Nothing to see here. Same exact offer in different clothing. Just the reallocation of risk. I don't feel like we're getting anywhere. Ben, where are we going with this?
I don't feel like we're getting anywhere. And baseball has always been a game about numbers, right? Whether it's stats, analytics, percentages. And now, unfortunately, with percentage of salary for each game, you really start to feel it this time of year, Alan, when the nights are getting long, like, you know, the shadows are getting longer and you get these long – you get these nights that, like tonight, where, man, I should be doing this from the parking lot at Dodger Stadium, right? It's really, you know, my dad is the biggest Red Sox fan on the planet, and you know, he's really struggling without listening to Boston Red Sox. I know my mother's struggling.
Is he upset? Is your dad upset?
Oh, he's crushed. He's upset at all of it.
Basically them, you know, continuing to drag their feet.
Well, it's not just that. It's just frustrating of it happens, the timing of it. Just but where is this happening? In Arizona or Florida or in one place? Are they splitting them up? Have they even gotten that far yet? Are they down to the actual competition of it all? Or is it, you know, are the Dodgers going to play the Angels a bunch of times? Are they going to play the Giants more? Or how's that going to work?
All right, we got some sound from Jeff Passan that I do want to play here coming up next. But real quick, just a quick reminder, 710 ESPN wants to salute all of our frontline workers as part of our Thank You Thursdays presented by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. If you know someone who is working as a healthcare provider, firefighter, EMS worker, or a food service professional, nominate him or her today. Here's how you do it. You email the station, ESPNLAMarketing@ESPN.com, with your first and last name, city, and occupation, or post a short video on Instagram or Twitter and include hashtag 710 Thank You Thursdays. Every Thursday, we'll interview a frontline worker and award them a $500 thank you gift to include $200 service to Valvoline Instant Oil Change, $100 gift card to Wingstop, VSLiquor.com, and Shooteria.com. So thank you to our partners. And, of course, as always, thank you to our frontline workers. Got some sound that I want to play from Jeff Passan when we come back. Also, what does all this mean from a timetable perspective, specific dates for Major League Baseball? We'll do that coming up next. This is the Sliwa Show. Ben Lyons joining as well on 710 ESPN. I was a little angry, Ben. I was a little fired up.
I get it, man. No baseball this summer has us all tweaking, man.
The funny thing is, it's not even that, you know, if baseball doesn't happen, the frustration from, you know, obviously a lot of fans, players, and so forth, which, by the way, I personally think owners are just completely not only just bullying the players, but their greed. And I know so it's so easy to point the finger at, well, you know, it's the players' fault and they're getting paid millions of dollars. The owners have this great luxury of sitting in the back seat where nobody has to see them. Yep. Nobody's got to interview them, and they could hide for as long as they want.
Yep. And it's a completely wasted opportunity to reinvent and grow their sport. I mean, their sport is in the toilet for a lot of reasons, I think. And now with all the ill will towards the Astros and everything going on, like, what a moment to just heal the country and move forward and create some excitement around baseball again. And no pun intended, they're going to drop the ball.
Well, Philadelphia Phillies outfielder Andrew McCutchen on Twitter.
had a very perfect
way of describing how these negotiations are going.
All right, bud, listen, if you potty on the toilet, I'll give you some juice.
Yay! Yay, juice!
All right, buddy, here's your water.
No, I want juice.
What about water in this cup?
No, juice.
I know we agreed on juice, but what about water? What about water in a bottle?
No, juice.
What about water in a coffee mug? You love your coffee mugs.
No, juice.
Look, it doesn't matter that we agreed on juice. I'm your dad, and you're drinking water. Now, either you drink this water, or you don't drink anything at all. Who's thirsty?
How about that, Ben?
That's what it is. Let's give these players some juice. Baseball's always at the juice, huh? Don't you watch Mark McGwire and the juice this weekend?
Yeah. Not that juice. But that's a perfect
that's
way to describe it.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. It's a game of percentages, so there's so many, like the NBA, there's so many issues unique to baseball. If I'm a middle reliever – whose job it is to come in and strike three guys out and that's it. But if I'm only going to get 6-7 innings in this 48 game season or something, like, I don't know. That's weird. What if I get shelled? Now I'm a free agent. I don't know. The fact that people are, it's just a mess. It's just a juice. Just give the kid a juice.
Just give juice. Just get some, you promise him juice. Give him a little bit of damn juice. Don't try and
that's
change
the thing. Any parent will tell you, don't promise the juice unless you're ready with the Tropicana to go. You know what I mean?
How about those Capri Suns? Remember those Capri Suns back in the day?
Back in the day? Are you kidding me? Still
take them down?
Why not? I'm a little past Capri always, Sun, huh? I feel like you should get ID'd the other way for Capri Sun. Like, oh, let me see your ID. No, you're too old to buy this.
Let me see your report card, okay? by the way, Ben, I always used to break the straw. Do you ever break the straw?
Oh, trying to put it in a bag? Yeah,
I had no chance of puncturing the thing. I'm like, I don't know what to do with this. Now I got to wait till 3 to where my mom's like, what'd you do again? That happened. It was only like 2 weeks ago. All right, let's hear from ESPN MLB insider Jeff Passan on SportsCenter. What is expected when Major League Baseball, the Players Association, receives the newest offer from the league?
Well, we should expect a rejection from the Players Association because they have made it abundantly clear that they're not going to accept anything short of a fully prorated salary. I just got a text from colleague Jesse Rogers, who heard from 4 players who said, let's just get it over with and play 50 games at this point. That's the feeling of the players right now, and it's frustration and it's disillusionment, but they are also intractable right now, so it's going to be interesting to see when they counter, which they're going to do by Sunday, which is when MLB has asked for a response to this, what exactly they counter with. We know it's going to be for fully prorated salaries. The question is just going to be how many games.
Ben, let me tell you the definition and the foundation of a great relationship, okay?
Yeah, break it down to me, single guy.
It's when you lie. It's when you try and take advantage of others. It's when you try to bully. Like, it's just so ridiculous, this relationship in baseball between the owners and the players. And I tried emphasizing the last couple of weeks, Ben, that I'm trying to go out of my way to sympathize with the players because I do feel like they are getting bullied. Like, in this whole thing, they are getting bullied. And at the end of the day, unfortunately, even though I think this time around there's going to be more people that look at the owners, even Jeff Passan, you heard how Passan sounded frustrated right there saying, this is what's happening. The owners, now it's going to go back to the players. Players are going to, by Sunday, figure out another plan or tell them that they don't like it. It's just not healthy for the sport, and that's really ultimately what it comes down to.
Two things I noticed. One, that music underneath Jeff Passan that was playing, that would never play under the NBA. If you had Ramona coming on to tell us like some updates on the Lakers, they would never play that music that was under Jeff Passan. That's hilarious.
You're right about that. And
you're right, you know, but here's the thing. The owners are going to continue to own for 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now, many of them. These players have a short window for which to play. Clayton Kershaw doesn't have that many more starts in him. Under 200 maybe left in his career, far, you know, at least probably, right? 100 starts left for Clayton in his career. I mean, their window, these players want to play because they are the players of now and their window is of a certain time. But these owners are in it for the long haul, so they're not going to commit to anything or do anything that's going to impact their business one way or the other long term.
All right, one more piece I want to play from Jeff Passan, who is on SportsCenter. What do the players do now?
Watch this music. Let's see if it's baseball music.
You know, as nice as it would be for the players to take that sort of principled stance, they're not allowed to, Kevin. As part of a collective bargaining agreement, if you have it in place still and you do not show up for work, that is an illegal strike, and the players recognize that as part of their March agreement, they agreed that the commissioner had the right to set a schedule. Now, what they can do is go and grieve. Now, they can file a grievance. They would go to spring training. They would play under grievance, you know, with the season starting maybe as early as July 14th, but it could start in August. And if there is a grievance setting, it would just be even uglier than it's been already and lead into 2021 with a new collective bargaining agreement in the worst state we've seen since 1994.
They're going to play, Ben.
Yeah, they're going to play. It's going to be a tight 50 games or so, and it's going to be exciting. And I think it's going to put an emphasis on every game. And yeah, I mean, when you hear they can,
it's going to be unfortunate.
Grieving. That doesn't sound like a fun thing I want to sign up for.
Yeah, that's not a word that I usually think of that I want to relate to a sport or anything in life. Okay, so Ben, tell me the plan for the weekend and what are you doing after this?
Well, after this, when we get a little cooking going and watch the new Spike Lee joint, Five Bloods with Delroy Lindo getting some early Oscar buzz. out on Netflix. Alan, I tweeted it out. I will never be comfortable saying my favorite director released a movie today. I'm going to stay home tonight and watch it. That's just so weird. I should be going to the Arclight tonight. I should go to the Lemley. I should be going out, meeting friends. But that's not the way of the world right now. But I'm excited to see the latest from Spike Lee.
No, this is where we are. What's on the menu? What's Chef Lyons doing tonight?
Oh, I'm going to keep it. I think we keep it in the Alan Sliwa world. We got a little pita. We got a little baba ganoush. We got a little hummus. We got a little shawarma.
When you said Alan, you know, Sliwa world, I thought maybe the keto conversation.
Lamb skewers going. Oh, yeah, it's going to be good.
You have hummus? Do you have hummus?
Of course I got hummus. I have hummus? Hi, I'm Ben Lyons. Nice to meet you, Alan. What? Do I have hummus?
If you didn't have hummus, none of it would have made sense. So
it's incredible, the backbone and incredible the versatility of hummus, unlike any other spread, right?
You mustard, use it anywhere.
Ketchup, they're like kind of like high usage, but they don't have the range. You know what I mean? LeBron is hummus and Harden and Westbrook are mustard and ketchup.
That is the greatest quote I've heard in a really long time. All right, Ben, I'm going to hit you up soon and we're going to go golfing.
Okay. Let's do it, man. I'd love it. Bring the hummus. I'm out there. Hummus on the golf course? What? No, seriously, bro. I would love to tee it up with you sometime, man. I know you've been getting after it on the driving range. We got to take it out to the course.
I definitely have not been getting after it, but I appreciate you saying that on air. Have a great weekend, and thanks for doing this. All right, bud?
Yeah, good stuff. Shout out to Kyrie. Appreciate the opportunity to come on your show tonight. Thanks, man.
All right, Ben. Thank you. That's Ben Lyons right there. Definitely have not been working on my golf game, so I'm not 100% what he's referring to. When we come back, Jesse, Curtis, we got a lot of great topics to get into. We'll do it together. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you, like your mom when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? 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 Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico. Always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Curtis, want you update a tweet that I sent out a little bit ago. You've been dying to do this. Go ahead, buddy. Go ahead. What does that have to do with breaking?
Big news.
By the way, earlier when we were doing this, when you know how Jess was saying yesterday that the lead up is way too long for the breaking, and then you and I liked it. It was so long earlier; it makes me like it even more. Like I didn't know if you were playing it, if you hadn't played it. That Curtis, we're on to something. Okay, go ahead with your breaking news.
I was on Twitter. As I usually am, usually preparing for this, and I see a tweet. Today's a very big day, so this is what this tweet's referencing. Alan Sliwa, 4 hours ago. Laker fans, 18-year anniversary of Kobe and Shaq's three-peat. What a great
That's
era.
That's right.
Very great era.
Great era. Great era.
What a great era of Lakers baseball.
What?
But he replies, basketball. Nice job, Sliwa.
What was I doing? What was I doing? Like
baseball.
Think about that for a second. Like, how can I possibly type in baseball right there? Like, what could be happening in my mind? Only thing I can think of is I'm sitting here. I'm doing some prep. Jesse's sending me Jeff Passan stuff. Great stuff we're going to use for the show. But even with all that, what the hell am I talking about?
Alan, don't you just – that's how much you miss baseball. That even when you're talking about basketball,
I miss basketball that much, trust me.
The back, the picture. I'm looking at something that says otherwise.
Yeah, you might be right there.
On the 30th, you can go and say it's time for Lakers baseball.
I can.
But I will give Alan props. He did leave it up because this was 4 hours ago. If
should
I did something like
I,
that,
I was going to say, would you delete it? Would you delete it, Jesse?
I think I would. Actually, no. Hold on. Let me rephrase that. If I had posted it and I didn't catch it myself, like if someone else pointed it out to me, then I would leave it just because.
Here's
all right, it's there.
Here's what happened. By that point, there was already like 20 likes, and I'm like, all right, am I gonna delete it now? Just leave the thing alone. So I left it.
Well, your correction is 27 likes now. So
that is who's going first here? Who wants in?
Ding. And what do I win?
Jesse, go ahead, bud. Go ahead.
Oh, I go first.
By the way, Jesse, where do you live again?
I live Eagle Rock Highland Park.
Okay, Eagle Rock Highland Park.
Northeast LA.
Just for listeners that are out there, you might hear
I need to,
a van backing up at any time now.
Oh, right? That's right.
That could be happening at any time.
Let me go look out the window.
To be fair, the last couple of days, I haven't heard it, so we might be
looking. Truck is there.
Well, so truck is there, then we're not going to hear it.
You never know. It might leave for a weekend getaway.
Okay. All right. What do you got there, bud?
All right. So today, unexpectedly, I woke up to some pretty great news.
Okay.
One of my favorite comedians and your favorite comedians, Dave Chappelle, released a special entitled 846.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, that's how long the officer kneeled on George Floyd's neck for.
Mm-hmm.
He released it on YouTube. It is less than half an hour. His entire set is probably less than 20 minutes at that. Mm-hmm. But it is great. It is fantastic. If you have half an hour to watch this weekend, I suggest
let's do this, Jess. Before you even go any further, let's spend a little time on it. Curtis, have you seen it yet?
No, I saw the highlights on Twitter, but I have not gotten a chance to see it yet.
Okay, so watch it this weekend. For listeners that are out there, watch it. I mean, it's some incredibly powerful stuff. You heard Jesse just mention it. 8 minutes and 40 seconds was how long the police officer kneeled and murdered George Floyd. It was 8 minutes and 46 seconds. And it's funny because I went into this having no idea what this was on. You mentioned it to me this morning, Jess. I called you early in the morning and you said, or when we were talking at noon, you mentioned that you said that you were going to, or you had just watched this this YouTube thing. And then I saw Joe Rogan tweet it out. He said, drop everything you're doing right now. Go watch Dave Chappelle for a half hour on YouTube. So I got home. I'm sitting here. I'm doing some prep. I'm like, okay, I'm going to watch this thing. I'm going to spend some time on it. It was so incredibly powerful from the heart, just intellectual of how he explains things, how he tries to simplify things. There's nobody that can walk away from this and not say, wow, I learned something from Dave Chappelle in this half hour. And I thought it was going to be, you know, a comedy show. It wasn't. It was very important. It was very moving. And I thought it was fantastic, like you mentioned, Jess. And the only reason why I hopped in on there, Jess, I think those, like, I want to sell it that if you don't just browse by this thing and say, if I get a chance, I'll watch it. No, make some time this weekend or tonight and watch it, because I think you'll get some fantastic knowledge of some of the situation going on right now under the social injustice.
Yeah, and like I said, it's less than half an hour, and I think that's a big selling point. That's not a whole lot of time. Throw it up and go on the treadmill for half an hour and watch it, because it turns from a stand-up set into this lecture kind of feel and vibe. Like, midway through, I was just sitting back and just listening. Like, there was no jokes involved, because he was just talking. He was conversating. He was lecturing, even.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's great stuff, and you know, I could only emphasize it so much. When you get some time, go see it.
Definitely. So, part of the reason why I love the documentary outside the actual content, it's very intimate.
Sure.
You had maybe 50 at the most people, at the absolute most 50 people were there. So let me be thinking, you know, what stand-up comedian would you like to watch in that kind of similar, very intimate, you know, less than 50 people environment? Because it's the environment makes a difference for comedians. And if you're in a very small group, intimate like that, you usually get very raw, very real, very funny stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Curtis, you got one in mind?
No, I'm kind of racking my brain on that right now, is to think. I mean, I haven't gone to a show in so long, but
Who are some of your favorite comedians?
We've talked about it.
I got a couple that I have to narrow it down.
Chris D'Elia is really he's really big now, but I used to follow him maybe 3-4 years ago when he was still doing his early sets and stuff like that. And he does a lot of making fun of the people that are either disrupting a show. He's really good, you know, he's really good at calling them out for that. But he's also involves a lot of people in his stand up. And I think when you have a small group, I think that'd be very interesting to kind of be a part of. But besides that, I'm kind of drawing a blank.
So I'm going to say other than Dave Chappelle, because Dave Chappelle is...
Oh, he would be at the top of...
He's number one, right? So let's say it's not Dave Chappelle. I think Kevin Hart would be pretty funny. You know, Kevin intimate Hart setting like good. That. Kevin Hart would be great. Bill Burr would be, you know, I know kind of a different type of comedy, but he's pretty hilarious. And then you got your legendary guys, right? Like, think of Chris Rock. Think of Chris Rock in that type of an intimate setting, you know, a legend. Somebody who's been doing it for so long. I think those would be the ones that stand out to me right off the bat. I mean, there's other guys I love. Like, I love Conan O'Brien. You know, I think he'd be great. I could, if I had to keep going down the list, I'm trying to think maybe a Jimmy Fallon. But Conan and Jimmy, we get to see much more often anyways. I think, you know, obviously because they do their shows. I think these comedians, those would be the ones that stand out to me. In an intimate setting, there'd be nothing more than to see somebody like Chris Rock or somebody like Kevin Hart.
Yeah, Kevin Hart I think would be really good. Two of the comedians that come to mind for me, one would be Joey Diaz. He's already open and raw as it is with like a normal crowd.
Is Joey Diaz that good?
I find him super funny. I just love that
he's... And I only know him through the Rogan podcast.
Yeah. No, I've seen, but how he, you know, contracts himself through the podcast is basically the same person on stage. Although I think on stage it's a bit more ticked up just because, you know, you're trying to sell it. But I think it would be, because I think in a very intimate setting, you'd get that kind of same rawness that he gives, but also like a different, you know, different side of it because it's very intimate. And another comedian who I would love to see, just because you don't really see him now, see a whole lot of performances from him in that kind of setting, would be Gabriel Iglesias. Fluffy.
Mm. I remember you mentioning that back in the days. Okay, so look, we'll mention it one more time. Chappelle on YouTube, go get a chance and watch that. Okay, I want to throw something out there. So looks like Magic Johnson has a documentary coming out. And I think it comes out in 2021. And that is, you know, when you just, I've said this to you guys before, and I'll say it again. Magic's my favorite athlete of all time. I just loved Magic's style. I love the way he was such a leader on the basketball floor. I loved his ability to pass. Like, that's one of the unique things where you make everybody better. Won 5 championships with the Lakers. So there's supposedly the filmmakers that put this thing together, this documentary from XTR, which is H-Wood Media, NSV, and Delario Films, granted him unprecedented access to the Basketball Hall of Fame inductee. And it just goes into, you know, everything else. This is obviously coming off the heels of The Last Dance. If there's an athlete, you know, I know for the both of you, you guys have not got that opportunity to, and even me, I only saw Magic towards the end of his career. But just kind of thinking about Magic Johnson and everything that he accomplished. So there's on the court, there's his, you know, him announcing that he is, that he tested for, you know, obviously HIV. That's just kind of another storyline. There's the portion of Magic Johnson that, coming off of the basketball floor, how successful this mogul, how successful that he's been. Between all these different kind of phases in his life, what part of it you think would be most interesting in this documentary? I'll tell you guys, for me, I think the most interesting, because I know so much about Magic on the court, I'd love to see how Magic made his fortunes, how that all worked out, how it happened, how he's sitting in the position that he is today. I think that would be the part that would be most interesting.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm kind of torn just because, you know, I grew up, you know, before at the tail end of Magic's career. You know, I can't say I ever remember seeing him on the court outside of, like, you know, the highlights we see on TV or on YouTube. So I'd be interested to see that. But I saw, you know, through reading into that documentary, that they're also going to explore how Magic came to the purchase of the Dodgers. And, you know, I don't know if you remember, but around that time when Frank McCourt owned the Dodgers, it wasn't really you know, good. But it was dark times for Dodger fans because that ownership was bad.
It was a mess.
It was a mess. So, you know, he came in and totally changed their perspective of the Dodgers organization. I would love to get an insight and see just how, you know, he was a part of all that going on.
Curtis.
What's up?
What's between in this documentary, Magic Johnson, what am I supposed to do with that? So what's up?
I'm kind of a little salty because that was my prepared question here, but that's okay. That's fine.
Well, it's okay. No, work with me on it. Work with me on it.
Yeah. You know, I don't want to say that there's been plenty of stuff about Magic. You know, you could really go. There's so much media based on what Magic's career was. And
right, as a player.
Even the HIV stuff, don't get me wrong, it's super important, but there's a lot of media out on that. So where, you know, a lot of us who even, you know, Jess and I didn't grow up even remembering it. So there's ways, you know, a lot of people know that. That's kind of like one of those things. But
sure,
I really want to see everything with the whole debacle of leading the front office with the Lakers, and I just wanted, because you know there's got to be more to
how it broke down
than to what we saw and that, you know, what we got. I feel like there's more there, and I think it'd be interesting to kind of get other people's opinions on that situation as well, because I know they did mention, you know, that this interview is going to have some of his family and, you know, obviously his coworkers and people like that. But I think it'd be interesting to hear a little bit more behind the curtain about all that, you know, all that happened.
Okay, so I want to point something out just as we, you know, we're active. Tonight's an active night based upon that conference call with about 80 NBA players. I want to read something off here real quick. So just in the middle of us doing halftime, one of those players to speak was Avery Bradley, obviously Lakers guard. This is from Shams Charania. He was the second person to speak on the call behind Irving, was very vocal throughout, urging players to take a stand and utilize this moment to play chess, not checkers, those sources said. So there's another Laker that obviously is a part of this. Among some of the other players on the call, Malcolm Brogdon, CJ McCollum, Joel Embiid, Justin Holiday, Spencer Dinwiddie, Harrison Barnes, Al-Farouq Aminu, Tobias Harris, Kyle Lowry, Mike Conley Jr., Zach Collins, Miles Turner, former NBA player and NBA executive, or NBA Players Association executive, Roger Mason Jr. was also on the call. So I'm naming those off, and we're in the middle of all this. Real quick, Curtis, kind of a crazy night, right? Like, I thought my conversation was going to be primarily tonight. I was going to spend some time breaking down all these dates that Shams had tweeted out a little bit earlier. What do you think of everything that's kind of taken place? It sounds like definitely players are not talking about COVID-19. They're talking about the social injustice. And at a time like this, it might be more powerful to not play than to play. We'll see what eventually happens.
I mean, I think Ben said it best earlier. It's like, it is very important, and obviously, you know, you kind of opened up saying, you know, we have a lot of bigger things than to worry about than sports sometimes. I think I think a lot of us were caught off guard because this is kind of the first we heard of anything, you know, because we were talking about how excited we were like yesterday even, and all of a sudden this comes out. It's like, wow, we heard nothing until that last hour, and now it's like all up in the air. It's just crazy.
Yeah, I'm reading some more of this right now. CJ McCollum stated that players must be prepared for the financial dip if they choose not to play, and owners completely ripping apart the collective bargaining agreement. NBA's leadership stated it is believed no fans will be permitted into games for the entire 2020-2021 season. How about that? That's part of the – go ahead, Jess.
Well, yeah, so I was going to say, you know, skimming that article, that was what one of the low-key things I think a lot of people are kind of missing, because, you know, everyone's going to pay attention to the players that are speaking up. But that is a very, very low-key thing that we definitely should not miss. You know, if there's no fans for the entirety of next season as well, whoa, that's big.
I want to make sure that this is – it just says Howard, so I'm assuming it's Dwight Howard.
Dwight Howard, yeah.
Because I'm looking for every other Howard here. Stressed to players that playing in Orlando will become a distraction from the issues the country is facing, and that they need to unify and use this moment to create a change. I mean, listen, this just it's going to be interesting how this all plays out. I mean, and Shams did an incredible job. Bleacher Report and Yahoo reported on Friday night that Irving was involved with setting up the call. Donovan Mitchell expressed concerns about playing due to being behind the eight ball, having not played 5-on-5 and being thrust into a competitive environment in an 8-game regular season. We're taking a big injury risk, so obviously that's kind of taking a little bit of a different side of things. So you got a lot of that. I know, Curtis, before we go into more of this halftime, Curtis, did you get the Woj? Woj was on SportsCenter.
I was just about to actually tell you, whisper in your ear, but since we're doing it, Woj just came on, so I was kind of distracted trying to get that, but Woj gave us the most recent update. I've got about a minute of Woj kind of explaining what's going on.
Let's take a listen to it. Got it there?
Steve, listen, if a conversation and a dialogue
so as soon as Curtis gets it, we'll be able to play it. Okay, let's go. You got it right now? Okay, let's do it. Let's do it, Curtis.
If a conversation and a dialogue that is going on among the players right now becomes a movement, yes, July 30th could be in jeopardy. You know, but for now, there's no question, and the league expected this, the union expected this, that there would be players who, for a variety of reasons, would not want to enter the bubble. But there comes a point where the league has to start imagining how many players it would take to stay home and how many elite-level, upper-level players in the league it would take to stay home for the league to have to reconsider whether they're going to go forward with restarting the season in Orlando.
All right, so I just wanted to make sure that we played that, just giving everybody an opportunity to kind of get the latest of what's going on with the NBA. So developing story. As we get more, we'll pass it on. Jess, you got another item for halftime here? I think I'm on my own, guys.
Oh, again, no, that was me. Sorry. I didn't realize.
We're falling apart.
Both of you guys. Both of you guys don't want to talk to me anymore. Nobody wants to talk to me anymore. go ahead, Jess.
So you've been to Japan before, right, Alan?
I have been to Japan, yep.
Did you go on one of those bullet trains when you were there?
Yeah, so one of the things you could do is, you know, buy your pass to the 7-day pass. So you could get 7-day, or I think you get a month. I got a 7-day pass and was able to take the bullet train. I mean, so incredibly freaking organized. And if it says it's leaving at 5:14, if your you-know-what comes at 5:15, yeah, you're going to go ahead and wait because it's so precise. It's so on time. It's incredible. It makes our public transportation not look that good.
That brings me to a funny story. I remember a couple years ago, me and my girlfriend wanted to take a trip to San Diego, but we wanted to take the train. And the train was running late. And it was like the first time we were taking a train and there was no hey, this train is here, you're leaving to this. It just kind of showed up randomly and then took off. And that was our train, but we didn't even know because it just like showed up randomly, like 20 minutes late, and which was close to the other time. And it was just all crazy. Oh, whoa. Woj, please, I'm talking.
No respect.
Seriously. So I missed the train and we had to pay, you know, to get on the next one. So just talking about how bad our social and our metro public transportation thing is here. So I bring up the bullet train because apparently there is some talks that a 14-mile bullet train from L.A. to Burbank, this would be underground. How would you think a bullet train would work here in L.A.?
Oh, it'd be amazing. It'd be amazing. You know who was trying to do this for a while was Elon Musk, and he's probably still, you know, doing whatever he's doing. I love the idea. I love the concept. And I was fascinated by a lot of this stuff when it was coming out, whenever that was, you know, years ago where the conversation was being had and they were just starting to do it. Yes, we can't go up, right? Like the risk of doing anything – let's say you had flying cars. The risk is for everybody else that's not flying. They're on the ground and two cars crash. It's going to be falling on, obviously, people. But the idea is below ground, those tunnels are – that's the way to do it. And I'm all in. I love that technology. I think that those ideas seem like not just fascinating, but they just sound like they make sense. I love the concept. I love the idea. Curtis, you want to get down there? Curtis, you want to get down there and put some work in one of these underground tunnels? What do you think?
I thought, I remember the whole Musk thing. I think it got shot down, but I think it points to the bigger issue of LA doesn't, besides buses, we kind of are struggling with our public transportation. I think there's just so many things that
Hyperloop. That's what it was. Elon Musk's Hyperloop. That's what it was.
It just seems like it's so, like, for some reason, any good idea here gets shot down. So it sounds really cool. And, you know, I was down for it when I saw it, but I just don't know realistically if we're going to.
Wait. Didn't you say today coming in traffic wise, right? Didn't you say it was like pretty much back to normal?
Oh, it was terrible. Yeah. I hit the normal traffic coming down the 5. I mean, it's been so much lighter these last few months. And like, I'd be down for it. I just don't know if we have what it takes kind of as, you know, this to get it, things approved and get it finally done. Because we've gotten so close so many times that, you know, it seems like it's just not going to happen.
Oh, traffic. Can you guys imagine going back to that too? Because that will eventually come. How nice has it been on the roads? Roads have been just the best.
The roads have been amazing because they've been empty. At least for me, when I'm on the road, they're usually empty. Mm-hmm. So it's nice.
It's a double edge though, just because I got so used to it for 3 months that now 2 weeks of traffic makes me really angry as opposed to what it was before. You know, so obviously we all get used to things, but
that's definitely going to be a learning curve, I think, for everyone. Once we all get back into our offices, it's going to be the traffic. And, you know, like now I could leave for my other job half an hour before I start and get there perfectly on time. Yep. Once traffic comes back, that's not going to be possible anymore.
Those days are over.
I'm working the midnight shift or the overnight shift. But if I'm working at 8 a.m., I gotta make sure I leave like at 6:30 to get there by 7:55, or else I'm screwed. Or else I'd be stuck in traffic and I'm running late and I'm texting the coworker and be like, "Hey man, traffic is back, unexpected. I'm gonna be a couple minutes late."
All right. Well, look, I guess that's when that happens. That means everybody's getting back to work, so it's all good. I guess either way, fellas,
it'd be a bittersweet moment.
Good topics for halftime. Good stuff, all right?
Yes, sir.
All right, coming up next, Jonathan Martin from the New York Times. So Jonathan Martin had the opportunity to speak to LeBron James on his More Than a Vote organization. And really, it's gets into great, great details about protecting African-Americans' voting rights, educating, also with a big emphasis on trying to drive young black voters, particularly men. So this is headed by LeBron James, Jonathan Martin from the New York Times. He'll come on next. He'll join the Sliva Show, and we'll get into that. Stay right here. Appreciate you guys tuning in. This is 710 ESPN. All right, very happy to bring on Jonathan Martin from the New York Times. Fantastic article right now. Raises great awareness. LeBron James and other stars form a voting rights group. Jonathan, thanks for taking the time and joining the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Of course. Look, I love, I spend all day, 5 days a week talking sports. And, you know, here's the reality. Over the last 3 months, sports has just become just a small piece of what's going on in the world. And right. I think this is a great, great example of how players are starting to try and use their platforms even more and more. So if you don't mind, you can please chat a little bit about the article and talk about the goal of this group aimed at protecting African Americans' voting rights.
So LeBron James, as many of your listeners know, has increasingly wanted to sort of do something bigger than basketball. He has said repeatedly that he believes his legacy is going to be more off the court than it is on the court. And I think this is in that same spirit. And what he has done working with Maverick Carter, who's his good friend and business partner, is they had conversations the last few weeks with a number of other pro athletes, mostly in the NBA, but some other sports. And they have created this group called More Than a Vote, which is going to be dedicated not just to sort of traditional turn out the vote activities in the black community that you see every 4 years. But this is also going to be dedicated to protecting African-American voting rights and trying to preempt and prevent voter suppression efforts to sort of limit black participation in this fall's election, which is extremely important right now because you know, some cities and states have tried to sort of curb voting hours, close down the number of precincts in a given city, for example. I think this is an effort to be vigilant and sort of stop those kinds of efforts.
John, who are some of the athletes that that are a part of this group? And so, I know you mentioned that it goes
So LeBron is leading it. He's also got Alvin Kamara, who, of course, is the running back for the New Orleans Saints, who's from Atlanta. And Georgia is going to be a crucial state this fall. Udonis Haslam, who's from Miami and Florida, obviously, is always an important battleground state. Jalen Rose, who, of course, is a Michigander, where Michigan is a crucial state. You're seeing sort of common thread here, and that is a lot of these guys come from politically important states. And so I think what LeBron wants them to do is effectively adopt their hometowns, their home states, and try to sort of, you know, get involved in their communities where they grew up, where a lot of them still live today, with voting rights groups, sort of partner with them to raise awareness in the community. And the upshot of this is that we're in an increasingly polarized age. People have less trust in institutions, whether that's the media, whether that's the two political parties, whether it's politicians writ large. And so there's not a lot of people who are sort of seen and looked up to and have credibility widely. And I think a lot of these athletes sort of do in fact have credibility, especially in their communities. They are seen as authority figures, trusted figures. And I think that's the idea. The spirit of this is, if you have a trusted figure, a Jalen Rose in Detroit, talking about voting rights, you know, that could actually have some more impact with the average person than a governor or a senator.
Jonathan Martin from the New York Times joining the Sliwa Show. Yeah. Great article, LeBron James and Other Stars Form a Voting Rights Group. Jonathan, I'll get your opinion on this because, you know, for me, and I think there's a lot of, we'll just use LA as an example, or just sports fans in general. Immediately when we talk about LeBron James, you're thinking about, oh, what an unbelievable basketball player. Look what he's done on the court. Just is such a leader on the court, finds ways to win championships or at least get his team to the finals. So we know what an all-time great he is. Someone like yourself, and I'm just what I'm referring to there when I say it, somebody who kind of, you know, delves into more than just sports. You're on the politics side as well. How do you think LeBron James is setting himself up off the court? Maybe he's already done it, but, you know, for his overall goal.
Well, if you read the article, and I hope your listeners will, at mytimes.com, you can just search LeBron James on Google and New York Times, and you'll see the story. If you read the story, his quotes are very revealing. And what he basically said is he looks up to an earlier generation of athletes, Muhammad Ali, Bill Russell, people who took an active stance in social justice movements, people who were engaged in politics. And, you know, he's skipping a generation there. He's going back to the 60s and 70s when it was much more commonplace to have athletes speak out against, you know, racism, against Vietnam. And I think he sees himself in that tradition, which is a sort of throwback to that generation, somebody who's not afraid to speak their mind, who's willing to court controversy, anger some fans, he's doing, in his mind, what's right. And I think that's what he sees as his legacy. He told me, he said, you know, if I can be remembered in the same spirit as Ali, as Bill Russell, Oscar Robertson, Kareem, then I will be proud of that. I want to make my mark, not just as an athlete, but as an African-American man, is what he told me.
I thought there was a powerful portion in your piece, one of his quotes. Hopefully someday down the line, people recognize me not only for the way I approach the game of basketball, but the way I approach life as an African-American man.
Exactly.
That is, that's powerful. And I think, you know, obviously that's what you're referring to there.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think that's what is on his mind here with this effort. And let's be honest, he's 35. He's in the autumn, right, if not the winter, of his pro sports career. He's looking beyond basketball, and he's the most famous American athlete today, one of the most famous athletes in the world. I actually checked this out. He's got more social media followers than any American athlete, and almost as many as any athlete in the world. So he's got a huge footprint online. He's got an enormous platform. And I think he realizes, look, you know, I've got to use this while I still have the kind of SWAT, the kind of clout that I do right now before my, you know, my career is over. And, you know, it's a very consequential campaign. I mean, it's a high-stakes year. The pandemic, the racial unrest, a very controversial president. And this is a big moment in American life, a huge moment in the world. And I think he recognizes the stakes of 2020. And to borrow a phrase, he has made his decision.
You know, Jonathan, about a week ago, maybe a little bit more than that, I was talking about some of the different athletes that were, you know, starting to feel very comfortable with voicing their mind and understanding that, hey, if there's ever a time to use my platform to my advantage to raise awareness, social injustice, this is the time to do it. And I was using as an example, I wasn't even coming close to comparing LeBron James' social media because, like you just mentioned, it's so incredibly big and powerful. I was talking about players. There's a player on the Lakers, Kyle Kuzma, who's probably their fourth, fifth best player, young player, has some promise. He has almost 4.5 million Instagram followers. Yeah. I'm sorry, 4.7 million Instagram followers, where the Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden has 2.2. So that just shows you we're not even talking – I couldn't even use LeBron as an example because that's not fair. It's so high, right?
Right, but, different stratosphere. Yeah,
but as you were mentioning, you know, using their platforms right now, obviously LeBron
are validators in their communities, and they've got enormous clout, as much more than most conventional politicians. You know, with a few exceptions, obviously President Trump, President Obama, there's no politician in America – that's got the kind of recognition, the fame, the celebrity of LeBron James. And I think, you know, he recognizes that. He wants to put it to use.
Yeah, nobody's wearing a Governor Newsom jersey. Those are not being sold at the local.
That's right. They're not even, being sold even Gavin, who, you know, I think is pretty well known for a governor, and obviously has gotten more famous the last couple of months. But, man, it's nowhere near LeBron, exactly.
As part of your piece, like I mentioned, Jonathan Marr, New York Times, LeBron James and other stars form a voting rights group. A great article in the New York Times. Jonathan, as you know, as you go through the article, I feel like this is one of the things I took away in this, you know, in this specific more than a vote organization that LeBron James is leading the way on. One of the things I took away was the goal was to try and drive younger Black voters, particularly men, correct?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, this is the challenge in the Black community is the sort of 65-year-old plus Black woman, especially in the church, she's a reliable vote. You know, she's going to be out there every 2 years voting for, you know, Senate, governor, what have you. It's always a challenge in the Black community to get younger Black voters, especially younger Black men, out to the polls. And part of that, frankly, is because of a sort of a sense of despair over, you know, how much can I change the system? And I think that's being reflected in these protests right now. And so I think that's what LeBron wants to do. And you talk to folks like Jalen Rose, and he recognizes that about we've got to get younger Black men out to vote. And, you know, part of their challenge, the Democrats in 2016, was that they didn't have the turnout among the Black community for Hillary like Obama had. And that is a huge goal in this effort, I think, is more younger African-American men in the polls.
John, the final question, I thought out of some of the different players that you mentioned were, you know, obviously a part of this group, Trae Young, who's the guard for the Atlanta Hawks, young player, 21 years old. Is that another just kind of, you know, strategic also in the sense that here's a young player that's trying to push a lot of his young followers that voting is important?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, LeBron made that point. He really wants to get some of the younger guys in the league involved because, you know, he didn't say this, but he obviously wants to pass the torch to them someday. And so I think, he's looking for guys like Trae Young, who are really just, you know, fresh out of college, 21 years old. I think he wants them to get out there because they have even more sort of credibility in the community if they go up to somebody 18, 19, 20 years old, because they're contemporaries. So I think, yes, you're going to see a lot of guys who are under 25 in the league who are going to be involved in this, and that's intentional.
Jonathan, thank you for doing this. Thank you for making the time. Great article, and I appreciate you giving us the time to put your insight in there.
Nah, I really, really enjoy it. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
All right, that says on point as you can possibly think of. Think of everything going on tonight, and then, you know, we obviously talk about some of the movement LeBron has. By the way, we haven't heard anything from LeBron. Well, I'm curious to see if he comes out, talks about how almost 20% of the league was on this conference call tonight. 710 ESPN wants to salute all of our frontline workers as part of our Thank You Thursdays presented by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. If you know someone who is working as a healthcare provider, firefighter, EMS worker, or a food service professional, nominate him or her today. Here's how you do it. Email the station, ESPNLAMarketing@ESPN.com, with your first and last name, city, and occupation, or post a short video on Instagram or Twitter and include the hashtag 710 Thank You Thursdays. Every Thursday, we'll interview a frontline worker and award them a $500 thank you gift to include $200 service to Valvoline Instant Oil Change, $100 gift card to Wingstop, VSLiquor.com, and Shooteria.com. 18 years ago today, the Los Angeles Lakers three-peated. I want to talk about that. Kobe Bryant, obviously Shaquille O'Neal, plus some more news from Adrian Wojnarowski. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. 18 years ago, Kobe and Shaq three-peat. Curtis, I did say it was one of my favorite times of baseball earlier on my tweet. Obviously, the Los Angeles Lakers, I've said this plenty of times, Kobe and Shaq, that was my that's the time of Lakers basketball that I enjoyed the most. Probably, I think a lot of that has to do with age. Okay, so real quick, fellas, let me tell you guys this quick story. So back in 2002, Lakers about to three-peat. Obviously, I'm down in San Diego. Do you guys know that they did this for that game? Do you know they opened up Staples Center?
Like, you can watch the game on outside?
Exactly. Exactly. You can watch it on... No, not outside. Inside of Staples Center.
Oh, so you can
pay
$10.
They were selling tickets for $10, $10 a piece.
Looking
right
through the openings there.
It was game four. It was game four. So this was it. This was a clincher. Lakers swept the Nets, right? So, you know, I rounded up the crew, a couple friends, my sister, a couple cousins, you know, all of us Laker fans. I took my mom's red Toyota Sienna, you know, kind of riding in style. You know how I do it, guys. You know, her van.
I got a Toyota Corolla, all about that Toyota life.
Yeah, so it's we got the Toyota, we got the minivan, and I'm like, everybody hop into this thing. We're going up to L.A. We cruise up the 5, make it up to Los Angeles, get there for tip-off. Concessions are opened as if, you know, like the arena's open. I forget how many people were there, but there was a good amount of people. Get into Staples Center, watch the game as if it's actually the first time I've ever been to Staples Center was driving up from LA to come to a game where the Lakers were on the road.
That's but, a good memory to have.
But that, hey, you know what? Like, it's also at that time, it's like, you know, affording tickets and everything else. So it wasn't going to happen. So, it was, that's the way I watched the game. And that's the way the Lakers won their three-peat, Lakers over the Nets. The funny thing is, the Lakers were so dominant in that championship, it didn't even feel like, even if you see the players' reaction, if you go back and remember the players' reaction, they just were like, yeah, just another championship. Like, Shaq goes to Mitch Richmond and gives him a hug, and Rick Fox shakes a couple Lakers' hands. Kobe's not even paying attention. Kobe's you know, saying congratulations to some of the Nets players over there. Lakers just dominated, and that's when they were probably at their peak. That was also the year Ori hit the three over Chris Webber because our boy Vlade Divac tipped him the ball. Some good times in Lakerland those days, fellas.
Very good times. I'm looking forward to feeling that feeling again.
Okay, well, if you want me to transition off of that, we do have some more Woj, some more Adrian Wojnarowski. Curtis, I know you were grabbing it on SportsCenter. Listen, I don't know what was going on 2 days ago, but where we're sitting now, maybe there are some question marks about having this season still played out. And frankly, I will say, if there wasn't a season, because a number of players started stepping up and saying, this is our time to put our foot down and not let the sport be a distraction, and all of a sudden people start forgetting about social injustice in this country and there's other distractions. If that were to happen, you know, this could be the tipping point for other sports. This could be, you know, a really, really big movement, because as much as over the last couple of weeks there's been an incredible amount of folks all across the country and all across the world peacefully protesting, can you imagine, Jess, think about that for a second. If the NBA didn't play because they decided, you know what, we're going to use our platform, we're going to put our foot down right now, we want everyone to know just how important, how serious this is. Let's just say they did that, Jess. You don't think NFL players are going to be watching and saying, okay, this might be different than other times?
Oh, definitely. It, you know, it's something like that. That would be such a, you know, monumental event, and it's going to be something that you're going to remember. It's history, you know, like it's almost unheard of, but if you see it happen, like, damn, like I'm just thinking about it now, and it's just like, I don't know how I would react, you know, inside, because as much as I want sports back, I know overall it's bigger than sports, and to do something like that, and to be able to do something like that, it's beyond, you know, comprehension in the midst of everything else that's going on right now.
Okay, Curtis, play that clip from Woj.
There's no question that among the elite players on the contending teams, you know, they've been pretty solidified in wanting to play, but that won't be enough for the NBA. And there's a real conversation going on among players, and I've talked to a number of them, both black and white, who are looking at the idea of what is the best way to be able to continue the conversation on racial equality that has been ongoing in the league. The world's eyes are going to be on the NBA. It's going to be beamed everywhere. The ratings are expected to be significant. And this would be the best possible platform to share a message. But, you know, there's another part of that conversation that guys are grappling with, and I think sincerely grappling with, about whether, you know, that is ultimately the way to go. There's also considerations about the isolation in the bubble. There's players on teams who know they're not going to advance. But ultimately, I think everybody in the league has to come to terms, too, with the financial implications of the league not playing this season. You know, next season could be in jeopardy. The league has the option to tear up the collective bargaining agreement, and many agents are telling their players they believe the league would tear up that CBA and restart with a whole new economic structure if the league didn't finish this season.
Okay, a lot going on. If you're just tuning in right now, let me give everybody just a quick update here, okay? So a call today with about 80 players. Some of the players on the call, this was led, by the way, by Kyrie Irving. Malcolm Brogdon of the Pacers, CJ McCollum, I won't name off the team, you guys know him, Joel Embiid, Justin Holiday, looks like Rudy Gay, Spencer Dinwiddie, Harrison Barnes, Al-Farouq Aminu, Tobias Harris, Kyle Lowry, Mike Conley Jr., Zach Collins, Miles Turner, Avery Bradley, a part of that call as well. This is obviously all stemming from the killing of George Floyd, and more than just that, but that's kind of that's been the tipping point in this country. You've seen a number of different players led protests across the country. Jaylen Brown, Malcolm Brogdon was a part of one, Steph Curry, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Russell Westbrook, DeMar DeRozan. There's been a number of players that obviously been a part of that. So to play off of this, Shams Charania was of The Athletic, kind of bullet pointed in his article some of the different things that stood out. So one of the things was Carmelo Anthony stressing unity, having a soul message, and allowing the young players in the NBA a voice. At one point, Anthony suggested having all 80 players on the call donating $25 to a cause that they wanted. CJ McCollum stepped in, stating that players must be prepared for the financial dip if they choose not to play, and owners completely ripping apart the collective bargaining agreement. You heard that coming from Woj right there in that clip that I played. How about this one? Curtis, wrap your head around this one. The NBA Players Association, the leadership, stated it is believed no fans will be permitted into games for the entire 2020-2021 season. That one's obviously another one that stands out. Dwight Howard stressed to players that playing in Orlando would become a distraction from the issues the country is facing and that they need to unify and use this moment to create a change. So you definitely have, you know, a number of players that are involved in this call, a number of players that are impactful to their team, and you also have some players that are looking at this as an opportunity to put their foot down. Fellas, I don't know what's going to happen. I will say that this is definitely a curveball that through the weekend, I'm sure there's going to be a lot more information. And as we get into Monday, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of storylines that come out of this. But at the same time, if the players decided that the NBA and, you know, playing for a championship is actually a better opportunity to say, no, we're not going to do this, got to respect what they're trying to do here. We'll see what happens. But Jess, that would be like something we've never seen before.
You know, all things considered, if it comes to that, I'd be pretty proud to be at this point in history, just so I can say, like, you know what, I witnessed all that happen. And we'd be in the middle of it because, you know, we're a sports radio station. We're going to be in the middle of everything. We're going to be seeing it all unfold. So, you know, I hope it doesn't come to that. But if it does, you know, it's going to be really great to see it all evolve and to see the progress that it will eventually make.
All right. Let's see how it breaks out. Just a quick reminder, Dr. Clapper tomorrow, Weekend Warrior, starting at 7 a.m. going until 9. Kamenitsky Brothers come right after that with their Saturday show. So from 7 a.m. to 11 a.m., all local programming as always. Jesse, Curtis, hope you guys have a good weekend. Appreciate everything today. To all the listeners out there, thank you for tuning in as always. I'm back Monday, 6:30, Lakers Talk. L.A., have a great weekend.